Alright, so we're the Outsiders, and we're here today interviewing Yale Stewart at AnimeCon 2013. I'm Wade Allen, here with
Mark Otley,
Leo Goodman,
and Mr. Yale Stewart himself. Hey. So Yale, JLA, it's a great comic strip. We read it every day. Every time you put it out, it's always on our Facebook page. I love it. Where did you come with the idea? What gave you the, what did you decide to go with Justice League as your characters?
Well, basically, I was just kind of sitting around one day, and literally, it just sort of popped in there. I had this idea of Clark on the playground as a kid, but essentially fully super developed in terms, meaning like his powers and stuff, and just kind of sort of being like a bull in a china shop, as it were, like accidentally making things crappy for, like accidentally stepping on people,
My dad.
yeah, exactly, trying to help everybody, but actually kind of like causing more doing more harm than good. Yeah. And it really just quickly spiraled out from there and started, including all the other characters and everything. And DC seemed like a good snug fit because, especially at the time, this was before the Avengers movie came out. Mm-hmm. So DC was really more in the public consciousness. I mean, not like actively, but I had a feeling that everybody kind of has like a basic understanding of all those characters, mm-hmm. with a few exceptions. So that would save me time in like exposition and like character development and stuff. And it just felt like a good fit, like a better fit than say Marvel characters. And I guess also, I've mentioned in some interviews before that like I didn't really grow up as a DC reader. And I think actually that distance is kind of beneficial to the strip. Because I've thought about what I would do if I did choose Marvel. And it's like, I might be too close to it to where like I wouldn't even know where to start or where to go because I almost had like too much going on in my head, idea-wise. Yeah, because like with DC stuff, since I don't have this like sentimental nostalgic attachment to like certain storylines or certain versions of the characters and stuff, I'm a bit more free to kind of like try something new maybe, or like take stuff in like a different direction. Whereas with Marvel, I'd be a little too reluctant because I'd be too married to like what I grew up with as a kid or something like that. So that's kind of a long-winded answer to a pretty short question, yeah, but that's cool. I hope people find it interesting.
So, I mean, is going from strength to strength, this snowball, this huge worldwide, you had an idea it would have gone this big?
No. I had a good feeling that, people would like it. I originally started posting it to Tumblr. Once I hit 100 followers, that was already a little bit bigger than I thought it would get. Because, it's hard to fathom how big the internet really is until you're kind of thrust into stuff like this. Because I was like, 100 people, like, that's a lot of people. That's like more, almost all my friends from and acquaintances from college. And stuff like that. And then I was like, okay, well, I hit 100. I guess fairly, it feels like it was quick. So maybe it'll even hit like 1,000 people. Like, how crazy would that be? And then that happened, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth. And now I'm at, almost 65,000 likes on the Facebook page. But, you gotta not get too full of yourself. Because at the same time, because like you said, we're at AnimeCon. So Yaya is here. Yaya Han, the cosplayer. And she's got 150,000 Facebook likes. So, I'm not even half her fan base or whatever. So, there's always somebody bigger than you. And then you got Jessica Negri, that cosplay chick. Oh, my God. She's got, 14 million fans or something like that.
I mean, she had a cosplay chick to Europe.
Yeah.
Give me a minute. So, as you were developing the idea of the 8-year-old superhero, mm-hmm. How did you want to stick with Superman, or did you have an idea that you were going to use like the Justice League characters from the beginning?
Well, it originally first started with just Superman, for literally about 30 seconds. because immediately when I had the idea for Superman, I started having ideas for Batman, mm-hmm. and ideas for The Flash, and ideas for Green Lantern, and they all just kind of started... It was literally like a dam broke, and it just like all came at once. Like, I didn't think of it as the Justice League necessarily, but I was thinking of all the members of the Justice League. So it only made sense to put them all together. And then when I realized it would make a lot of sense to make them all classmates, you know, essentially make them like a homeroom of characters, which would explain why they're always together. I mean, not that kids that age need a reason to always be together, but, you know, it kind of added like an extra layer to the whole thing. So, yeah, I mean, technically it all started with Superman, but that did not last. I mean, that was like a blink of the eye before it exploded into like the entire DC universe.
You have an amazing voice for the child and the adult characters. It's really staggering. Is that from, you know, you said your own experiences kind of projecting onto the characters, or is there a lot of research that goes into finding that kind of voice?
Well, not active research. I mean, I guess I've kind of like subconsciously been doing research because I've grown up, you know, like always watching, you know, like every Christmas I'd watch Charlie Brown's Christmas and like the other Peanuts holiday specials. And this is also a fairly well-documented thing, but like I also grew up a huge fan of a television show that, at least back in the States, I don't know if it has much international play, but it was called Arthur, which is about, it's like an anthropomorphic children's cartoon. Like the main character is like an aardvark and his best friend's a rabbit. Yeah. Yeah. And back home, it's incredibly well known. It's been on public broadcasting for like 16 years now. But even to this day, I hold that show an incredibly, like, I can still watch it at this age and be entertained by it because it never like talked down to the audience, even though it was essentially a kid's show. And that kind of taught me how to write for kids, sort of, because I realized the reason it appealed to me is because when I was 8 years old, 9 years old, Arthur and Buster and Francine and all of them sounded like me. And as you get older and keep watching it, you realize you felt that way, and then you realize you don't really talk that differently as a kid. You just have like a smaller vocabulary, and you know, maybe you're a little bit more enthusiastic about stuff, maybe your logic is a little bit more flawed. But when it all boils down to it, you know, an 8 year old isn't sitting there, you know, goo goo gahing like a baby. Like you're 8 years old. Like you're not old, but you've had enough life experience to understand like how to talk. Because sometimes you'll have those like children's things that just.
I'm gonna tie you into Gaiman's children's books. They're the same way.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. You can
totally read them now, and
yeah,
they have that same kind of voice.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, good segue. You put Neil Gaiman in there.
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why was that? Just because you wanted to honor him?
Or? Well, I mean, sort of. Like, I thought it would be because I don't know if I'd necessarily say, like, eagle-eyed readers, but the teacher of the class is Julius Schwartz, who is an incredibly famous and important editor in DC Comics history. Like, he is essentially responsible for the entire Silver Age of comics, which is the vibe that I'm going for with JLA. And I thought, wouldn't it be kind of fun if essentially all the adults were kind of like major real-life players in the DC universe, like people that helped shape the universe, like literally helped build it. So when we got around to the kids needing to go to a bookstore, I was pretty much down to two options, and it was Mark Waid or Neil Gaiman. And I thought Mark is more, like, he's kind of most famous for just, like, his breadth of knowledge. So I thought maybe he could, in the future, like, be a librarian or something like that. And, you know, that'd be, like, a fun cameo. But at the same time, I was using that as an example because I think I'm going to do something different with him because I had a better idea for a librarian a long time ago that I will not disclose. But I was like, also, the bookstore is very dependent on the fact that Clark doesn't, the whole idea that he like decides to write this story for Diana, it's like who better to recommend telling a story than Neil? Like that's like his whole shtick.
Channeling Morpheus, it was so perfect.
Daniel, but yeah, and I, honestly, like I thought again, it was one of those things. Like I thought people would get like a quick chuckle out of it the first time, but people like flipped out over that. Oh. And actually, I got, like, for a while, I got, like, really nervous because people kept, you know, because they would, like, mention me in the tweet. Mm-hmm. People started, like, barraging him with tweets being, like, have you seen that you're in this webcomic? And I was like, oh, no. Because, like, I didn't want him to think. I mean, like, I know that Neil is reputedly a pretty nice guy. Because, like, I mean, like, I've talked to him now, but, like, not in, like, great detail.
Sure.
But I was like, I hope he doesn't think that, like, I kind of, like, was, like, hoping for a shout-out and, like, trying to get, like, exposure and stuff. Like, literally, it just seemed like a good idea at the time.
It seemed really respectful, and, just for a unique point of view.
And, yeah, no, I mean, he ended up responding to it because I took it upon myself to be like, hey, man, you know, like, I hope that you're okay with that. Like, I did, like, literally, I didn't even think that far ahead, whatever, whatever. And he's like, no, you know, like, I really enjoyed it. And I was like, oh, well, you know, like, that means a lot to me because I really like you. And then he was like, oh, and I, like, went back and read some of the others and, like, really enjoyed them too. And that was when I was like, oh, my God. But, yeah, so yeah, that was the whole kind of idea behind Neil is that, A, he's incredibly important to DC history. And he also just fit that particular role in DC history. So, yeah, it just seemed like a fun thing to do. And fortunately, it worked out really, really well.
And just since we're talking about DC, has there been any friction at all or any interest at all? Just awareness? And...
Yeah, I mean, as far as I know, I just know that they know about it. Like I know creators. Like, they're creators at DC who I guess I won't name just because, yeah, since I don't really know how DC feels about it, like, I don't want to maybe get anybody in trouble.
Sure.
But there are guys that work for DC that are incredibly supportive of it and big fans, which, you know, is certainly flattering and everything to kind of know that the guys creating the source material think that it's pretty cool. But yeah, in terms of, like, DC as an entity, as, like, the big faceless thing, yeah, I don't really know how they feel about it. Like, they've never really reached out in any way, positively or negatively, which, honestly, it's kind of like all I could. I mean, obviously, I would like for them to reach out positively, but I'd rather just kind of coast on neutral until I'd rather run the risk of coasting on neutral than.
I was thinking about it when you said it upstairs that the risk is they start hedging in on your creative control where they start telling you what to do.
Well, yeah. See, I mean, people think that way because it comes up a lot on, like, the Facebook page. That people will comment and be like, oh, like, why hasn't DC snatched this guy up? And then there's always somebody who, like, I understand that their intentions are good, but they're like, why would you want that to happen? Because they're just going to mess it up. And I'm not sure if those people are entirely sure about how comics work, because it's like, I would be signing a contract before that happened. And if there was anything in that contract that made me feel like DC was, and I mean, honestly, I might be talking about this a little too much, but, like, if I felt like storm clouds were gathering and, like, essentially they were just taking it away from me, but, like, paying me to do it, but, you know, for them, like, I wouldn't sign that. You know, it's like, I'm not gonna do it unless everything kind of goes the way I want. And, like, and this is actually kind of maybe gonna be problematic for my future career. Like, the fact that I've come up as a webcomic guy entirely independent, like, I'm not gonna give that up for nothing. Like, I like being in total control of everything that I do and having, like, final say in it. I mean, granted, maybe an editor would be a good thing at sometimes, but at the same time, like, why the heck would I ever give up the ability to be like, this is what I want to do, so this is what I'm gonna do? And yeah, I it always kind of confuses me that people don't really understand that.
I think for us, it's just the history. We see it happen.
Like, sometimes it's hard for me to understand, but at the same time, I can't blame people, I guess. So, like, I get it, but I don't get it. Because on the other side, it's like, you do realize that if I'm getting paid to do it, I'm going to be able to make more of them. Like, you know, that's the other thing. Yeah. But, you know, whatever. I'm not too worried about it.
Well, since you mentioned creative control and being your own guy, would you ever work for Marvel DC on one of their own characters? And I guess, if so, which one would you like? What's your
dream? I mean, that's actually a really, really good question. For quite some time, I guess the answer still kind of holds true. I would really kind of like to get a crack at Robin, but again, kind of only if I could do what I wanted to with him.
Just for clarification, this is
Dick Grayson, the original Robin. Because yeah, like honestly, beyond what I'm doing with JLA, there really aren't that many stories I'm itching to tell with any of those characters at all. And it's like, it would be cool to say that, like, oh, I got to do an X-Men comic or something, but it's like, I don't want to do an X-Men comic unless I can do an awesome X-Men comic. And if I don't have an idea for an X-Men comic, it's not going to be an awesome X-Men comic. That being said, I wouldn't really want to write it, but I would love to draw all new X-Men right now.
That's a really good point.
To be able to draw the original five as kid, you know, as like teenagers and stuff, because the people that have read Gifted, that's kind of in my wheelhouse. Like, I like to draw kind of like younger, like young adult type characters and stuff, and that's just, you know, like I'm a huge fan of movies like Dazed and Confused and American Pie, and just that whole, like, at least in America, that's like such a cultural thing, just like the like 17, 18 year old kind of like transitioning from like a kid into what you think you're an adult, but you're totally not an adult.
Yeah.
It's like a huge pop culture thing, and I think that it's like a well that never runs dry. So yeah, like I don't really have any stories I would like to tell with the all new X-Men characters just because I haven't thought about it, but I would love to draw, especially to do it like as a period book, to like go back and draw them like 60s. In like 60s clothing and, you know, like fashion and everything. God, like Ivy League stuff. Oh, that'd be the bee's knees, man. That'd be all about that.
I love that as well. That'd be awesome.
Or like a vintage Spider-Man style comic. That would be super cool.
I'm actually reading Steve Ditko and Stanley stuff now again.
Yeah.
That's great.
So you just mentioned Gifted, which is your own comic. Right?
Mm-hmm.
For our audience knows you from JLA. Can you give us a little background on Gifted?
Gifted is a creator-owned thing that I've had going for like a really, really, really long time in terms of just like an idea. That actually, I mean, I guess I might as well just say, because I'm going to be essentially re-debuting it this October at New York Comic Con. And as far as I know, it's also going to be debuting on Comixology. So I should just talk about it as though it hasn't even come out, really. But basically, it's like a semi, it's like a semi autobiography, and I'm doing like that hand shake thing here that you do when something's kind of like half and half. It's like kind of an autobiography, but not, because you know, write what you know, and I know me and my friends, and I know that we've had some adventures and stuff that would make for good stories, and good comics. So basically, it's just about me and my buddies kind of in our later high school years. So again, that like 17 to 18 year old range, and just all the sort of nonsense that comes with that, from sort of like irresponsibility to responsibility to, you know, like chasing girls and girl problems and just basically growing pains and stuff like that. I mean, it's mainly intended to be a comedy. But it's kind of a comedy in the vein of, like, Scrubs and Futurama and Parks and Recreation, which is to say those things are all comedies on their surface, and really, really good ones. But the common theme there is that they all always have, like, really strong character-driven dramatic undercurrents.
That awful word, dramedy.
Yeah, I don't like the word dramedy, but yeah, like...
It's all really about the character.
Yeah, you know, like... One of the things that makes Parks and Recreation great is that there's actual like conflict and stuff. It doesn't take the driver's seat, but it makes the comedy almost even better to know that there are kind of stakes involved every once in a while. And you know, to counter it, the sentimental like dramatic stuff in Futurama was so poignant because it was coming out of such a goofy show, and it like really kind of, you know, humanized all those characters and stuff. And that's the kind of thing that I like. You know, I'm kind of a guy that sort of likes all things in moderation, and it's like I feel that comedy is better when there's some drama involved, and vice versa. So that's the way that I operate. But at the same time, Seinfeld never had any drama, and that's like my favorite show of all time. So you know, but there's only one Seinfeld. So anyway.
And Now, Gifted is like a one volume thing?
Or well, actually, now it's kind of being broken down into like multiple issues. Admittedly, it would probably work better as one volume, but it's something that I need to get back to it.
Sure.
And it would take me so long to get that volume out. You know, it probably be like 3 years from now or something.
So it's going to be an ongoing or a mini?
Yeah, it's basically going to be the Great Party, which is essentially like a mini arc that kind of like kicks the whole series off, and which is what's happening in the first issue. It's probably going to be like a 3 to 4 issue thing, you know, maybe like 120 pages total, and it would make like a decent giant size comic or something like that. But because the only way for me to work on it with any degree of frequency is to be making money on it, so I kind of have to break it up into smaller issues. Because otherwise, like, if I was doing it all at one big volume, that means that whole time I'm not making money on it. So that means I have to take on, like, extra commission work the whole time. And that, like, makes the process longer. And it's kind of like a weird catch-22 type thing. So I just decided, you know what, I'll just go with the individual issues and hope to, you know, get them out quick. And hopefully people will enjoy it that way. So we'll see. I mean, that, you know, like, when you put stuff available on the web, you can do it cheap anyway. So people might be more inclined to be like, oh, let me pay $2 for like a 32-page book, as opposed to like $4, $5 for a hard copy.
So it'll be on Comixology from October as well?
As far as because apparently, like, I actually met John, one of the co-founders of Comixology, and he's apparently been wanting me to, I hope I'm not putting words in his mouth, but it feels like he's been wanting me to get Gifted on Comixology, and I told him about my plans to re-debut it at New York Comic Con, hard copy.
Right.
And he was like, if you want, like, we could have, like, a joint release, like, on Comixology as well, and, like, even give me codes to put into the hard copy so that people that buy it in hard copy will also get, like, the, you know, the CBR file.
Right.
Or what, or CBX or whatever the heck those goddamn things are. And, yeah, so I think that would be really, really cool and hopefully, you know, generate some interest in it. The only problem is, like, even I will openly admit that I think the first issue is a little on the weak side. Like, I think that it's, like, a decent enough hook. But honestly, if I could, I would probably go back and redo a little bit of it. But at the same time, it's like, I'm not redrawing that thing again. Maybe like the fourth time that I've redrawn it. So hopefully people know me well enough from JLA to their, well, they're like, I'll give it a second issue shot type, which is a horrible, horrible way to try and start a career. But
well, since you said that, that's actually one of my questions. I'm a huge fan of JLA and I want more EL stuff. Where do I start? And Gifted seems to be the next thing up there.
Yeah, I mean, Gifted is really pretty much the only other thing. I mean, you could argue I was doing those backup things in The Legend of Luther Strode.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's over with now. The last issue came out, I want to say, like, 2 weeks ago?
I think it was about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, something like that. I know it was recent. I know that much.
Yeah,
and I remember being kind of bummed that I wasn't able to make it to the shop. I mean, I've since bought it, but I wasn't able to go buy it the day it came out. Yeah, so that stuff is done, so that's not anything. I mean, people, if they want, they can go back and buy the 1-6 Legend of Luther Strode from Image. And I've got a bunch of backup. I got a backup in each issue there. But yeah, other than that, it's pretty much just JL8 and Gifted. And then, you know, like the commission work and stuff I do that I post up online.
So on JL8 again, just in terms of characters, I'm a huge Superman fan, and I love how you portray him in that. He's great. But my standout character in each strip is Barry. Barry's hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna lie. Like, I thought Barry was fun and everything, but I've never really considered comedy to be like a, or at least that kind of comedy, to be a strong suit of mine in comics necessarily. Like, my comedy is more like subtle character stuff, I like to think. So I thought people would be like, oh yeah, you know, like, that's kind of funny. He's fast. He's hyper, you know, like, whatever. But, like, people, like, really took to him.
Yes.
And I'm glad, because he's a lot of fun to play with, because, you know, he's kind of like a lovable doofus.
Yeah.
I mean, in some ways, like, eventually you'll find out that he's actually a fairly deep character in a lot of ways, but it is fun to play him that way, and I'm really glad that people seem to enjoy him as much as they do. Because, I mean, you know, you always want everybody to enjoy all your characters,
yeah.
So... I would never be like, man, why do people like that one? It's like, if that's the case, then, like, why do you have that character? So, yeah.
I know this is a webcomic, and so that's your primary format. Is there any chance of book collections in the future? Never?
Absolutely not. No. Okay. That would be... That's like stomping on thin ice. Like...
Oh, I mean... Okay.
Yeah. That... I mean, there's no way DC would not come after me for something like that. Because, like, as far as I know, the fact that I do it online, people aren't paying for it. You know, it's just a thing that's there for people to read.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that falls under fair use.
Oh, okay.
I acknowledge that I could be completely wrong. But, you know, whatever.
The moment you start charging for...
Yeah, which is why, like, I don't have, like, a dedicated... Like, I haven't, like, built a website for it that would, like, run ads because technically I'm generating income. So, which is why I just use Facebook because, like, I'm not making any money through Facebook. Right, I don't even know. I guess there's a way to make money through Facebook, but I don't know how it is. But yeah, like, I do know, however, that printing up a book and selling it for money, featuring those characters, like, you're not gonna see the inside of a courtroom, like,
just automatically.
Yeah.
But my follow-up for that is, you have had success doing a webcomic now.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that you would think of doing? Maybe with another set of characters.
Well,
because it's a different type of form.
Yeah, like I mean, like when I very first started thinking about Gifted, I thought about doing it as a webcomic. But I think, honestly, I know that everybody likes JLA. Well, that sounded kind of pompous. Like people do like JLA a lot, and like I understand and like am coming to terms with that. At the same time, by nature, I am a very long-form storyteller.
Okay.
Like, in kind of the vein of... Like Brian Azzarello is, like, a huge influence on me. Like, I love 100 Bullets. And stuff like that just doesn't really work for webcomic stuff.
Yeah.
So that's why I kind of abandoned the idea for Gifted, and why, honestly, if given the opportunity... It's not that I would like to take JLA away from being a webcomic, because I like the fact that it's a webcomic, and I think that helps a lot for it. But if I could, I wouldn't mind doing, you know, like 5 updates a week. The only problem is that is an awful lot of work to be doing for and making no money. And like, when am I gonna fit in like commission work to help pay the bills and stuff? Which is why it's down to 1 a week right now, because I have to eat. So, yeah, JLA, as much as I love doing it, it kind of has to take a back... Like, it's a weird balance, because at the same time, that's if JLA falls off, so does my business. You know, like, the non-JLA business. And so I have to strike this, like, it's like a really delicate balance of figuring stuff out. That, and also, at the same time, doing 1 a week tends to let more people see each strip. Because, like, if I did bang them out, like, 5 times a week... People would be missing some, and like, I don't know if that would hurt it or help it in that, like, oh, like, I understand that I missed one, but I'll just go back to like where I last was and catch up. But yeah, man, webcomics, they're a fickle thing, man. They're tricky. So, you know, more power to like Kate Beaton and all them who make it work.
Okay. Well, let me just swing you away from JLA for a second.
Sure.
And again, the topic that the three of us normally discuss a lot. What do you think about the state of like the New 52? What's your opinion on it?
Don't have you trash that out.
I'm not trashing it. It's not sense of being. He likes it already.
I mean...
Well, let's try something else. Are you reading DC Comics now that you're writing JLA?
No. I actually stopped reading DC... admittedly, I don't really read that many comics to begin with anymore. Just because, like, there's...
You're working.
Yeah, because I'm working and, like, it's just hard to keep up with stuff. Like, I buy a lot, not really a lot, but like I'll buy a lot of comics essentially strictly for the art, because that I can like observe and, you know, like absorb pretty quickly, because like I'm not gonna not buy an Olivia Coipel book, like,
right.
That's just not gonna happen, or a Jay Lee book or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Because oh my god, Jay Lee,
awesome.
Dude, he's on another level.
Yeah.
But anyway, you know, that kind of stuff, I almost like have to be aware of that stuff. It's almost like being a fashion designer and like not buying fashion magazines. You need to know like what other guys are doing. But yeah, like honestly, Oh God, yeah, it's kind of hard to talk about, but there aren't too many DC that, and I mean also, I've just never been a big DC reader to begin with, so it's not really anything having to do with the New 52, as much as it is just
DC.
I'm more of a Marvel guy, yeah. Really, in terms of being a fan. Mm-hmm. So yeah, like I'm reading Thor and Daredevil and Indestructible Hulk and all that stuff, which is all fantastic, and I'm sure there's a bunch of great stuff over at DC. It's just, that's not really what I grew up reading, and right now I'm not really at a spot where I can, like, I feel like taking the time to, like, learn a new character and stuff. So, yeah, I'm not really buying too many DC books right now. I was buying Animal Man just because Travel Foreman is awesome, but he came off it. Apparently he's, like, coming back on or something. I don't know, but if he starts doing Animal Man again, I'll definitely start picking that up just for the art.
Cool. Where can people follow you if they don't know already?
Well, it's almost so many different spots that it would almost be easier to just either Google my name or just JL8, and you're going to pretty much have like a buffet of ways to follow. There's on Facebook, which I'm sure you could either just type JL8 into the search bar, or it's facebook.com/, JL8comic LOL. On Tumblr, it's jl8comic.tumblr.com, so no LOL on that one. And then, you know, like on Twitter, it's just my name, at Yale Stewart. I guess those are really the main ones that I am engaged in, like, on a regular basis, so that's really the only ones I need to push. Yeah, so.
Cool. Thank you so much for sitting down with
us. Yeah, guys, I enjoyed it. So it's always a good time.
So I know you're pretty hungry. You can walk around the convention, so we're gonna let you get some meat.
All right, that sounds great. Cause yeah, my stomach is starting to rumble. I'm gonna be like very.